Hello, and welcome to the Astro City Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting Kurt Busiek's Astro City series. In this Astro City Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Astro City, The Dark Age, Book 1, Number 1 through 4, from 2005. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. Now, we're about a decade into the Astro City stories, because Astro City launched in August 1995, and this first issue is from June 2005, but it stretches on. I think the fourth issue was published in October 2005.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, when you said we were in a decade into it, I was like, oh my God, I didn't feel like I'd been doing it that long.
No, the publishing time, the book.
Yeah, at first I was like, oh my gosh, time has passed. No, yeah, this has been going on for a while, and it came out sporadically as he did it back then, and now it's just been kind of missing in action, which is unfortunate, but whatever. You know, like, I just kind of roll with it now.
I'm just hoping when it comes back full swing and is able to get a full arc out and a timely manner and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm still wondering where that big omnibus is. You know, what happened to it?
Oh, the Epic Edition or whatever?
Yeah, we saw it in the catalog and it just disappeared.
Well, again, it was in Diamond and not the Image preview, so somebody jumped the gun.
Yep, that was crazy.
But we ought to see it any time now, because I'm figuring it was, they had to advance solicit it for the book market, which needs like an 18-month lead time, it feels like. Whereas the comics only needs about a 3-month one, so we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. By the way, this is my first time reading Dark Ages stuff, and I had never read it before, but the feedback that I've heard from people who did read it was they didn't enjoy it, or it was long in the tooth, and just not some of the better Astro City stuff. So it kind of tilted my perception a little bit going in. I knew that, but it felt like Astro City, but different.
Did you like it?
I liked it less, but I didn't mind it.
I think that's the general consensus. Nobody, I think, thinks it's bad.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people, myself included, don't think it's as good as a lot of the other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It takes a darker tone, Dark Ages. And it seems like I think Kurt is better they're doing the bright colors. They're making superheroes seem more superheroic. And not that they weren't here, but there's a lot of non-superheroic stuff that happens. And you're kind of seeing a world that it just, things are not as you'd want them to be if things were happy and cheerful.
Well, this is set in September 1972, and it starts from there and goes forward. I'm not really sure how much time elapses in these four issues.
Yeah, me neither. Kind of oblivious, or it's ambivalent about it. It's just, you don't know where we are.
There are a few things to anchor it in time, having lost Vietnam, Watergate, and stuff like that, but I don't know when Watergate happened. It was in the 70s.
Yeah. That's pretty much where I am.
You know, I was a kid. I didn't care. I'm an adult, and honestly, right now, I don't care. But if I were to look it up, that would tell me how much time might have elapsed.
Exactly.
I guess for me, part of it here is we've got two lead characters, Charles and Royal, that are the protagonists of this arc and each other's antagonists at times, it feels like. And they are, through the captions, narrating a lot of the story. I was going to say almost all of it. It's a surprising amount of narration and a told story versus an experienced story, if you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean, and that's one of the things I didn't like about it. I like to be shown and experience a story versus just reading chunks of text, you know, and it's doled out to me.
This didn't get to the point of an illustrated story, but it was leaning heavily in that direction.
Yeah, exactly. There's a fine line. This is not the bad thing. It's just a little more prose heavy.
Yeah. Well, and it's a little more off-putting because subconsciously, you realize, well, if these guys are narrating it after the fact, then they probably survive.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're really invested in these two guys, that's great. But if not, they're kind of, in my case, it felt like between me and the story.
Yeah, exactly. At first, I think it was like, you know, and I'm just guesstimating here, about 10 pages into it before you really start getting into the names and trying to figure out how they're intertwined, these two characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just like, why do we keep showing them? Why do we keep showing them? And then I'm like, oh, and then literally they are the story for the four issues. They are. So if you don't like these characters, you're not going to like this four issue arc, Dark Ages Book 1.
Yeah. Now, it's worth pointing out that the Astro City Aerosmith one-shot came out in 2004 in April. This arc started in June 2005, so over a year later.
Wow.
And the story for Astro City in that was On Mulberry Street, a prelude. And remember how it ended with the family in the apartment as the pyramid agents were going to go do something?
Yeah, yeah.
That family is Charles and Royal's family.
Ah! We're tying it all together, but a year, and we even had a break in there. I didn't piece the two together until you said that. And at a year apart, you would have never put two and two together. That's cool, but unfortunate because of the time delay there.
That's where I think if somebody is reading this Astro City stuff in the Metro books, they're going to go through it as fast as they want to go through it.
Yeah.
That could be cover to cover all the way through. Now, granted, there's 100 plus issues, so probably not all in one sitting, but they could do it in short order.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do all of this in a weekend.
Yeah, you really could. Yeah.
I mean, I say that having done The Warlord that way once.
In a weekend, you read the whole Warlord?
Yeah.
Wow.
I had nothing else to do that weekend.
And you read 133 issues?
Pretty sure I did, yeah.
Wow, that's impressive. Was it a two-day weekend?
Oh, yeah, a two-day weekend. And I probably started on the Friday and plowed in through the end of the Sunday and stuff.
You are a prolific reader, John. Good man.
Well, and again, 17-page stories, it pulls you from one to the next pretty quick.
Yeah, Warlord does that, and they are kind of quick reads, too.
Astro City, be a little harder to do that because longer stories, more meat on the bone. And I think Dark Age here is a great example of how there is a ton of story being told in the background.
Yeah.
Because over these four issues, we get some really interesting stuff with the first family and how Tyrannus Rex kind of, they encounter him, he joins the team, all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, I did enjoy that. It kind of happened in the background, but I thought that was nice.
Mm-hmm. And then we also got a few other things here and there on other characters like the Apollo 11.
Jack in the Box?
Yeah, yeah.
You got Jack in the Box like arresting people, and he was kind of like the highlight for the superheroics. And the Silver Agent, of course.
Silver Agent and the Blue Knight.
How can I miss the Blue Knight? He's kind of like my Punisher mixed with Ghost Rider.
Yeah. Oh, and they really lean into the Ghost Rider side of it this time.
Exactly. Yeah, that was kind of cool. And it started off where you're thinking the Silver Agent, he's a bad guy, but it kind of flips in there, which I thought was kind of cool near the very end because I was reading, I was like, this is kind of a depressing story, you know, seeing all this stuff going bad.
Well, and this is where it gets interesting with Astro City because there's an aspect of it where it's kind of sort of told real time, but also uses enough flashbacks and stuff that they can tell a story here told in 2005 set in 1972. So it's not always stuck in the present day, but this is the original Jack in a Box. We'd seen his son's successor the last time we'd seen a Jack in a Box.
Correct.
We had seen the Blue Knight in the flashback with the lawyer and stuff. We've seen the first family at different points and whatnot. So they've got a cohesive timeline for this universe in a way that Marvel and DC kind of can't, because when you've got dozens and dozens of titles over, you know, decades upon decades upon decades, it gets kind of muddled as to the timeline.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
When you're 40 issues in on the entire universe, you can have whatever timeline you want as long as you keep it consistent yourself. And Kurt Busiek's a master at that.
Exactly. He's charted it out and has a plan. And as long as you stick to that plan, yeah, you can play, I don't want to say fast and loose, but you can utilize the stories you want at different times.
You can change the plan whenever you want if you can keep track of what you've published and what you haven't and adjust what you haven't accordingly.
Exactly, yeah. And I'll tell you what, this was really interesting. And like you said, the real-time aspect, but in the past, at first I felt a little off kilter when I was reading it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I felt like the more I read with each issue, the story started to coalesce and come together more and more solid. And I felt like it ended better than it started for me. Because when it started, I was just like, this is a little bit of a mess for me.
I can agree with that. I think it takes a little while to get to know Charles and Royal and care about them. And since Royal is the narrator for the first half of the first issue and stuff, you're like, who is this guy and why should I care?
Yeah. And what was it that made you care about Charles and Royal? Because for me, it was when their childhood.
To me, it's the love-hate relationship.
Okay, all right.
The only family the other one has, so they love each other on those grounds, but they also can't stand each other.
And it's so weird, and they show that, and Charles is the, let's quote-unquote, good guy, and Royal, I don't want to say there's good and bad, because there's area of gray in here, but he's portrayed as the good guy. He's the cop.
One's a cop, one's a henchman.
Exactly. The other one's a henchman, but the henchman actually has a lot more character to him than you would expect, because like when you see them with Charles's girlfriend, and the girlfriend, Royal's trying to warn his brother, don't mm-hmm. marry this girl. She's not good for you.
She's a gold digger, yeah.
And she's literally flirting with the brother when Charles went to the bathroom. And I was just like, oh, what a disgusting woman. She's horrible. And Charles took that as a slight. You don't want to see me happy, you know. So there's this tug of war between them, and almost that disagreement, like you said, that friction between the two, even though he's looking out for his brother.
Well, and the economy of storytelling, because that scene in the bar, and we go back to that bar with those two time and time again, but that particular one where Darnice is, she's not cheating on Charles with Royal, but she's certainly leaning in that direction.
Yeah, she's flirting with.
She comments that those two have been best friends for years. She doesn't know they're brothers.
Which is insane, yeah?
It says a lot about their relationship, though.
It does. That they don't bring that up. It's just an acquaintance, you know?
I'm sure neither of them had said, this is my friend or whatever, but they hang out together, ergo they must be something, and they never admit they're brothers kind of a deal. So it's, again, there's a lot going on with an economy of words, and you add to that the stuff that's just kind of going on in the background, because we get some recurring stuff about, obviously, the Silver Agent. We get it about Starfighter, the Apollo 11, the First Family, and stuff like that. Just so many things just sprinkled in the background. It's crazy.
Yeah, I would say Silver Agent was one of the key ones for me. But yeah, they were sprinkled in the background, but you saw like Silver Agent almost every issue enough to progress his storyline or his plot a little bit more and get some satisfaction at the end of book one, which was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see, this spoke to me a little bit because these brothers were impacted by superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that impact, chose different paths in life. And one went to the side of law enforcement, and the other one went to the side of being a henchman. But both universally don't like superheroes.
Well, and one in particular.
Exactly. One really doesn't like them.
Well, and it's interesting because we see the same events of what happened after that prelude in flashback a number of times, each time kind of pulling back another onion layer or whatever. We get a little more information, a little more information. One or two times, it's like, wait a sec. You intentionally led us to believe this when it was really that, which annoyed me. But to then see how the two brothers were in the same situation, same events, and reacted very differently from it, and how that really set the trajectory they were on for at least this far into their lives.
Exactly, yeah. I thought there were some really cool things in here, and that's why it's weird. It's like, not one of my favorite Astro City stories, and I can see why people didn't care for it because of the darker tone.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there's a lot of cool and good stuff that happens here. It's still a good story.
Yes.
And so that's where it's like, it's good, but not the best, but I still like it and I enjoy it. And I actually hope that we see more of certain characters in here because of stuff that was sprinkled in here.
Who would you like to see more of?
Well, just for selfish reasons, I want to see the blue, is it the blue badge?
Blue Knight.
Blue Knight. I keep calling them the blue badge.
It was the black badge that we think their father was.
Yeah. Okay. The Blue Knight. And the reason why, you know, growing up, I really love the Punisher type character.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, like Ghost Rider and stuff like that. He's a spirit of vengeance. And I love that thing, how he marks people and tracks people. And I almost want to see his origin story to see how he was possessed, because he has no mercy. He almost seems worse than the Punisher. You know, once he marks you, you will die.
Yeah, I definitely think there's more to his story. I'm trying to think if we ever get the rest of his story.
Yeah, by volume three, I don't remember reading him. So this is old school James. This is the type of character that I've been like, oh, this is so cool. Today, honestly, I like the First Family and more of that. But I've evolved as a reader from cool bloodshed too. I still appreciate that stuff, but it's not my primary.
Well, there's something to be said, though, of if you're going to fight crime, fight it decisively. And I'm not saying I'm for that mindset. I'm just saying there's something about that mindset.
Yeah. I did love that whole thing where Royal got marked by this character.
Mm-hmm.
And so he literally has like a glowing...
Like a gun sight. Target. Yeah.
Yeah, like a gun sight on his neck. How that happens, I don't know. I'm like, is he irradiated now? But he literally is running around town and hiding in a basement with tinfoil around his neck to keep it covered so he's not killed. I mean, it just crazy. You know, you go out and it slips off a little bit and boom, he's popping up and coming after you. It's just horrifying. And this is not a murderer. This is not a person who's committed a major crime. This is petty theft. He marks you, you're going to die.
Yeah, yeah. And they get some explanation on that because Royal winds up getting like essentially a job offer to work for, what was it, the Scarpellis or something?
Yeah, exactly.
So presumably a crime family there in Astro City, because that seems like a good lifestyle choice for people there.
Exactly.
And he later learns that the reason they were hiring was because their membership had been getting thinned out, or their labor pool had been getting thinned out, because some kid died. I think they said it was from like a Scarpelli torpedo or something. And the Blue Knight was hunting them because of that.
Yeah.
And Royal finds that out and he's like, I'm out of here. Because Royal, he'll rob stuff, he'll pickpocket, he'll do petty crimes. He takes things. He doesn't hurt people. Things can be replaced, is his mindset.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, again, it furthers the Blue Knight's kind of parallels in some respects to the Punisher. And add in the branding, the skull look, and the supernatural aspects they play up here. And it definitely goes towards the Ghost Rider kind of thing, too. Spirit of Vengeance.
Yeah, I thought it was just really cool. And the other thing that really stuck with me, but it's an old classic character, was the Silver Knight, about how you viewed him as a criminal throughout the whole book. And just for that to flip on its head, and almost a war to start at the end of the book, where you can see a whole cast of superheroes based on Majestrix?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tongue twisters, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm like trying to save the Silver Knight, and the Silver Knight's like, no, don't. But like literally all the superheroes from all over Astro City.
Madame Majestrix was there to get Tyrannos Rex back, because that was her son.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And the Silver Agent, who was sentenced to die that day, comes out and stops her.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's some stuff that happens that it's like, this isn't quite what people were thinking, and, you know, shenanigans, whatever, that was set up in the previous issue. That people are like, oh, wait, hang on. He just saved the day, and what just happened?
That's true. And you had people go from hating this character and wanting him to be killed
mm-hmm.
to they were cheering him on, literally. And it was just weird how the court of public opinion, and yet it tracks true for the way mob mentality takes hold of people.
Yeah, yeah. They're very much in the moment. And it's interesting because there's one or two things that are pointed out but not explained here. And they may get explained later, because there's a two-issue limited series for Astro City Silver Agent, which is published in 2010 after all of the Dark Age books are done. It was actually the next mini-series. So I'm curious if that addresses one or two of the open questions from book one here with him.
Yeah, but overall, I thought this was really cool because of the large cast of characters you get, the integration of all this stuff, and the interplay with the brothers. And all that being said, this would be a really good, decent comic, and yet this is not one of the best Astro City things, which is weird.
Well, I think it's some of Kurt Busiek's best and worst writing in Astro City.
Yes. The text, the prose, the way it was dished out, it was good and bad.
Well, I mean, you look at the background stuff, and again, there's so much going on there. World building and things that we know from earlier issues we're seeing actually happen here and whatnot. We got some great characters, some great moments, so I think a lot of that's good. But it was a darker story than I think a lot of people were potentially wanting, myself certainly.
Yep.
It was narrated by two kind of sort of nobodies. It's a full four-issue story here, and this is book one of four. So it pretty much monopolized Astro City for like 5 years.
Yeah, wow.
Now,
wow.
There were some one-shots in between the books, but those were just kind of intermissions or whatever.
Yeah. And for people to know, when we're talking about Darkness, we're talking about a major superhero being on trial.
Mm-hmm.
for the death sentence. We're talking about old soldier who showed an appearance. For some reason, fighting with the North Vietnamese army, like standing up to fight against the Americans. Weird. You know, like things you don't normally expect to see.
Well, presumably he was fighting against war atrocities.
Yeah, war atrocities, because they said it might be another My Lai, or I think that was the massacre that happened.
Yeah, yeah. But that was something that kept percolating in the background and stuff.
Exactly. So he was doing a good thing, and yet at the same time, I can see if I was a Vietnam vet, I'd be like, oh, what? A superhero, not on the American side. You can see people saying that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, old soldier, true to himself, he would stop an atrocity, you know, if one was going to happen.
Exactly, exactly. But I mean, there's an arc for the old soldier kind of subplot or whatever. There's certainly an arc here for the Silver Agent. We get an arc for the First Family. We get introductions to a couple of new characters, Hellhound, Simon Magus, the Apollo 11, Starfighter.
Do we see them again, the Apollo 11?
Yes.
We haven't really seen much of them, but...
Yeah, we see them and Simon Magus and Hellhound, I think, in the next book.
Okay, they're kind of like a weird amalgamation of characters.
Yeah, the Apollo 11 is kind of sort of a riff maybe on the Fantastic Four, but obviously in a different way than the First Family.
Yeah.
Simon Magus is something akin to Doctor Strange, Doctor 13, the supernaturally kind of stuff. Hellhound is somewhere between, again, a Ghost Rider and Hulk kind of thing, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
We haven't seen enough of him really to know if that's accurate or not.
Exactly. So you're getting tons of content in here. I would say the most superhero-y of the bunch was when we saw Jack in the Box in here. You know, being like the airy, light, almost like a Spider-Man type, you know, running around, being true to form, and at the same time not being dark in any way.
But we see that from a distance through Royal's descriptions.
Exactly, exactly. So very weird. That was the brightest part, and it was a description.
Yeah, I was frustrated by the just how much the Williams brothers were front and center in the story.
Yeah, I really didn't care for either one of them.
Yeah.
I not to be mean, but I didn't care for them.
But I think that's the crux of why the Dark Age isn't seen as a highlight of the Astro City stuff. It's not bad, but either you really like it and gravitate towards it, or you're like, can we move on to some other focal point characters?
Yeah, exactly. They got a little long in the tooth, a little depressing, and I think while at the same time, they had a very weighty story and it made sense. And I think that's what I'm guessing. He wanted to make this a weighty, very impactful story with real people. And he achieved that, but did it in a very dark way.
Well, I think he was trying to use the 70s as a social turning point and whatnot, like it was in real life. But how would that have happened in Astro City? And he, I think, did a good job with that.
Yeah, he did what he wanted to do. Yeah, this was felt like, to your point, it feels like a lot of Astro City. I think Kurt's a 1950s kid. And so... He probably saw, he's definitely a baby boomer. He probably saw the tail end of the 50s and 60s and, you know, more happy-go-lucky, and things started to get more socially change with the Vietnam War in the 70s. Protests, people speaking out against the government, people are unhappy, unrest.
Mm-hmm.
You had the civil rights movement. So all this stuff happened. He saw the world change. And I'm not saying, you know, for the worse. It's just change, where things, instead of being happy and bright and cheerful and we're all pulling and tugging in the same direction, now we're pushing and fighting against each other, different factions of society.
Well, and just, again, there was a lot going on in the real world at that time, some of which is mentioned in the background here, and there's certainly a lot of thematically similar things going on in Astro City at this point.
Yeah.
So it's got the usual density that Astro City has, possibly even more so than a lot. It's just, in so many other four-issue chunks of Astro City, we'd have gotten at least two or four stories at that point.
Yeah, very much so.
Here, we're just getting this chunk of what's going on for this point in time for Charles and Royal.
Yeah, and even the ending of this book, it ended so weird, like depressing, like no reconciliation, no coming together of the brothers just walking apart. Yeah. I'm just like, it ended so nothing's changed. Nothing has been resolved. Well, we're stuck in the same rut.
And this is one where the captions on each side was them both interpreting the moment.
Yep.
And we get literally one word of dialogue of yeah on the entire page.
And that didn't work for me personally.
Well, this is something that is comic book-ish and very uncinematic.
Yes. Yeah.
Because if you had tried to film this, you'd have had two guys standing there, looking at each other, turning and walking away with just the one line, yeah, and that's it. And it puts a hell of a lot on the delivery of that line.
Yeah, they have to put a lot of facial expression, and they're looking at each other, because we have the cheat code of Kurt's written it out for us in text box, what they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's very comic book.
They could have either reconciled here, or they could have laid into each other again, and they basically did a pass and, you know, pick it up later.
Exactly. Very weird, and with a lot of things in here. And once again, it would still be like, I recommend it, but there's some better things in this world.
Yeah. No, I think it's definitely worth reading, but I don't think this is where, like, somebody should start Astro City with.
No, they probably end up hating Astro City if they read this first. Not hating it, but thinking, this is a really dark world. This isn't very fun. Because
mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like this was a fun book.
Well,
at all.
It's also a slower story.
Very slow, the delivery, the pacing.
You know, because again, this is paced for the four issues, versus normally we'd have seen these two guys for an issue or two and moved on.
Yeah, most everything else was one or two issues, other than the metal guy. I can't remember his name, but you know who I'm talking about.
Steeljack.
Steeljack, yeah.
Well, it's interesting because even his story, which went on for like seven issues, had a few kind of intermissions, it felt like, when we got the story on some of the other characters.
Exactly. This is one solid story.
And in the end of the first couple of parts, we get that usual, you know, to be continued sign, you know, Astro City Department of Public Works, which I think that's a nice kind of fun way to say, hey, we're still in the story and whatnot, and to make it feel quasi-in-universe of, are you leaving the city or not? But then when we get to that final one, we get a sign that's, you know, end of book one. Not, you're now leaving Astro City.
Yeah, exactly. So you feel like you're into a big, meaty story at this point, which technically we are.
Yep. We're a quarter of the way through the Dark Age, because again, four books, four issues each. Now, we're going to skip over the one-shots that were in between, because between book one and two, there was Astro City Samaritan Special. Between books two and three was Astro City Beauty, another one-shot. And then between books three and four was the two-part Astra miniseries. And we'll circle back to those once we've done book four. And then after book four is the two-part Silver Agent stuff, which I'm thinking ties into some of the stuff. It's been long enough since I've read it, I don't remember.
Okay. All right, cool. Well, I'm looking forward to reading it, but I have a feeling, this is just a gut feeling, that it's a little bit downhill from here. I hope not.
And I think there'll be some things you like, because based on the covers, it looks like we're going to get, again, more of the Apollo 11, Simon Magus, and Hellhound in book two. And I think you might like some of those characters.
Yeah, Hellhound especially sounds kind of cool.
And then in book three, based on the covers, we get some of Starfighter, who was introduced here, but really we haven't seen enough about him to really see what his thing is. He feels like the alien Starman, in my mind. But we also get the Apollo 11 and such. And then in book four, I'll be honest, none of the characters on the covers really ring any bells for me.
So maybe a new cast, for all we know?
No. We see some new characters in Astro City. That much is certain.
Okay, all right.
But, I mean, these are called book one, two, three, and four for a reason.
Okay, all right.
So, again, I liked a lot of what they did here, but I also disliked some of the storytelling style. There's nothing wrong with the lead characters. I just didn't really warm to them. And it's not bad. It just wasn't what I was expecting or wanting out of Astro City. And then for it to take up the basically 5 years of the run, I didn't win a lot of people over either. Because there was, again, a little bit of a gap between, well, about a year gap from where this leaves off at the end of book one to when book two starts.
Wow. Just crazy delays the entire existence of this series.
Delays, gaps, tomatoes. I to me a delay is they said it would come out on date X and it came out on date Y.
Yeah.
Gaps is it just was a while between issues, but it came out when they said it would, more or less.
This is just a weird spoiler. It's not really a spoiler about the story, but I highlighted a book to talk with you about when we do our next monthly spotlight, mm-hmm. where there was like literally a 10-month gap. And I'm like, I can't remember what was happening. I just can't. And yeah. And so I can just imagine frustration if, like, going into book two, you needed to know anything that happened in book one and you were reading it in real time.
Well, and to me, that's the fundamental difference between reading something off the rack when it comes out and reading it in the collected edition.
Correct. Yeah. And a lot of people will comment, like, sometimes to you and I that we read it wrong. We're like, oh, well, just wait and read it all at once. Let it stack up. And I'm like, well, then there would be no monthly comic spotlight or no weekly comic spotlight back in the day. We have to read it in real time. Otherwise, we can't have those episodes.
Well,
so we kind of have to read stuff as it comes out.
Let's say I and everybody else read Astro City, quote unquote, right by that definition, which I think that definition is totally insane. That would mean nobody was buying it and reading it at the time. It wasn't getting good word of mouth. It wasn't getting the sales. It wasn't around for us to be reading now.
Yeah. Nobody told you it was cool and that you should pick it up. And it seems like a recipe for those books to either, once you get to it, you have 10 books that you hate, or you miss out on things because maybe nobody told you that maybe would have read it and said, hey, this is really cool. You got to pick this up.
Neither reading month to month or back to back is the better way to read it. Reading it month to month gives you some time to think about the characters, the story, and what would I do there? How would I get the characters out of the situation or whatever, to mull it around if the story warrants that. It also smooths over the rough edges between issues because you kind of forget stuff and it gives a little grace for the next issue potentially.
Exactly.
Flip side, you read it back to back and stuff, you've got a lot more story momentum. Those potential bumps between issues either smooth out or become, you know, tripping hazards or some such. So again, there's some things like when I'll go through and marathon a TV show. And there's some shows that have the previously on.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, this happened, and you need to know it for this episode. And I'm like, I just saw that scene 5 minutes ago, and that's not what he said. You're lying to me.
That's funny.
It's annoying. So to say reading it month to month is the right way, to say reading it in a collected edition is the right way, I think is the wrong mindset to be having in general. If it's a well-written, accessible story, you could read it either way and get sufficient enjoyment out of it.
Yeah. I think the thing you and I pine for, and we're kind of getting off, but this is something that I really pine for. I believe wholeheartedly the art that was lost is each issue should be able to stand on its own. And that's the way comics used to be written, which is why you could walk into the shop, pick up issue 249, and it made sense.
Yeah.
And today you walk in and you won't see anything 249. But you pick up issue 11 and you're lost. You're like, what's going on here? I don't know. You're clueless. You don't know what's going on because it's part of a 6-issue arc and you're reading the back part 5 of 6 and you don't know what is going on at all. No one's going to tell you.
And it says something that on the title page of these things, there's a few paragraphs of, hey, Charles and Royal, they're brothers. One's a cop. One's a petty criminal. Here's what's going on in the story and let's get back into speed. And then they give us some stuff in the story to help clue us in, too. So it's trying to be accessible. But
yes.
Yeah, that's a lost art in today's comics.
It really is. I think that's what frustrates me, and I think that's why people in general kind of checked out, because it doesn't make sense and whatever. That's a whole different topic.
Well, it's got to be accessible, and it's got to be entertaining enough that it's still percolating in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
If it's read it and forget it, that's a bad story.
Yeah.
No matter how well it may be written.
I agree. And it's just a lost art and it is gone. And it's never coming back, unfortunately. So we got to struggle through and find the gems that we can and enjoy them for what they are.
Yeah.
and hope for an Astro City to come back one day. Where are you, Kurt?
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, next time we're going to jump over the Samaritan special. We'll come back to it later once we finish the Dark Age, and we'll hop straight into Dark Age Book 2 and cover all 4 issues of that.
Awesome. That sounds fun.
Anything else?
Nah, that does it for me.
Cool. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the Preview Spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next Preview Spotlight.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.